Welcome to the San Diego Psychological Association's podcast, Diving into Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Carcel. This podcast has been developed with the intent to inform and educate the general public and providers and should not be relied upon for any other purpose. The content, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and not those of the San Diego Psychological Association.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I am Dr. Monica Hinton. I am your guest host today for Diving into Healing. And our guest today is Dr. Janina Scarlett of Superhero Therapy. And I'm so excited to talk with you and meet you. And I've kind of followed you secretly for a long time now. So this is really fun. So introduce yourself and tell us all about who you are.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor. I'm like kind of fangirling a little bit. very excited. So I'm Janina Scarlett. I'm a clinical psychologist, author, and a full-time geek. And I specialize in incorporating pop culture. So anything from traditional superheroes, be it the Avengers or Batman and Wonder Woman, or fantasy like Harry Potter or sci-fi like Star Wars and Star Trek into evidence-based therapy to help folks recover from PTSD and anxiety.
Well, I have to say you are a psychologist after my own heart because I am a huge geek myself. Yeah, so we've already connected because of Storm from the X-Men, and I have my own Storm story too, but today we're going to talk all about you. And so how did you come to love everything superhero and everything X-Men, actually?
So one day I want to hear your Storm story, please. Okay. Storm has a very, very special place in my heart. She was my first window to geekdom. I myself am a trauma survivor. I was born and raised in Ukraine, and my family and I, much like everyone in Ukraine, was exposed to Chernobyl radiation in 1986. And so as a child back then, I grew up basically in and out of hospitals with severe health issues. And when my family and I moved to the United States, I was 12. Mm. I was in middle school. And, you know, like as an adult now, I joke that we should start an I Survived Middle School support group because middle school is rough.
Horrible.
Horrible. I mean, I don't know what's happening, right? But I think worldwide, right, this is the age when it's not just the hormonal changes. I think it's that we're trying so hard to fit in, mm-hmm. and we all feel lonely, mm-hmm. so lonely in our experience, but nobody's talking about right. it. And so like a lot of kids my age, I was severely bullied and, you know, I stuck out like a sore thumb. I was the little immigrant girl that didn't speak English, and I came from a radioactive country, so I was a very easy bullying target. Right. But I thought that nobody else understood what it was like to go through depression or anxiety or trauma. I didn't even have the vocabulary for this because no one in middle school talked about mental health. We didn't have seminars on this. There were no TV shows about this. Avengers movies didn't exist yet. And so I went all through middle school thinking that I was broken just for going through mental health difficulties. Mm-hmm. And it was when I was 16, I was working in the movie theater and the X-Men came out. And we were all asked to go to the midnight screening. So it was Thursday night, right? Work night. And the movie theater was sold out.
Wow.
Every room completely full. And so I go in and I was like, I don't know about these superheroes. You know, I don't know if it's for me. And the second the movie opened, I just fell in love with it because it was so real. Mm-hmm. It starts off by talking about the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And all four of my grandparents were in the Holocaust.
Oh, wow.
We see the rest of the X-Men, right? And each and every one of them had been through some kind of a trauma. Mm-hmm. And because of this, they gained their superpowers. Mm-hmm. And then I see Storm. Now, most of my health difficulties happen when the weather changes. My health problems get worse when the weather changes. And I see Storm and she can control the weather and she's the most powerful goddess, you know, that I've ever seen. And I was like, I want to be her. She's just so amazing. And as I'm sitting there and like, you know, falling in love with her as a character, I'm having all these epiphanies that, wait a minute, what if everyone, like the X-Men, has some kind of like a painful thing. I didn't really have the word trauma, but, you know, something painful they go through. And what if we all maybe develop some kind of a strength over time? What if everyone carries some kind of pain with them, but nobody's talking about it, right? Because I'm looking around the movie theater and I'm thinking, not everyone here experienced Chernobyl, but why is everyone so into it? And then it just hit me that everyone knows what it means to feel lonely.
Yes, yes.
And that's what the X-Men has taught me, is that fiction can give us the permission to tell the truth when the truth is too scary to tell. So it was because of it that I signed up for psychology and never looked back.
So that's amazing that you had that epiphany at the age of 16. Sitting in a movie theater. Most people don't get that epiphany well until adulthood. So that's pretty awesome that you had that experience. So tell us how you're able to really merge the evidence base with the superhero and the social media and all of that. Because I have watched all of your interviews with the superheroes and your support groups on YouTube. They're really fun. And so how are you able to actually do that? Because I'm sure people really want to know. And it also helps, like you said, it really helps people connect with their own truth. And that's what superheroes have done for me, help me connect with my own truth and my own chaos. And so, yeah, even well, we'll get to my story another day, but go ahead.
I'm on the edge of my seat here. Please, can we like schedule a time? Because I want to hear it.
Yes, we can schedule a time.
But, you know, ultimately, it's about language. Mm-hmm. I look at pop culture as a part of my client's culture. And so I look at it as me learning my client's language, right? So whether I'm doing cognitive behavioral therapy, for example, instead of thought challenging, or as a part of thought challenging, as a part of Socratic questioning, we'll talk about a particular fictitious character. For example, when people talk about that they wanted to be a superhero and they feel like they're broken, right? Because they develop PTSD or they're struggling with panic attacks. I might say, who is the most powerful superhero you can think of, right? And they might say, you know, Batman or Superman or Iron Man. And I might say, well, does this superhero have any kind of vulnerability? And there's not a single superhero out there that doesn't have a vulnerability, right? Everyone. One of them has a vulnerability, but it's because of that vulnerability that they're so impressive and courageous. And it's about reminding that person where their core values lie, right? And so drawing these parallels, I find, takes the stigma out of the situation. And so in this example, I'd use like Socratic questioning and acceptance and commitment therapy, for example. We might practice mindfulness. So I might say, okay, so maybe like Spider-Man, we're going to notice what our spidey senses are telling us right now. So we're going to sit and breathe, or we're going to connect with the force and embrace our inner Jedi. Or my favorite, I do this meditation exercise and it's called Feeling Your Inner Storm. And so it's about embracing your anger. I don't know about you, but majority of women I know, and myself included, or, you know, at the very least, people who were assigned the sex of women at birth, have been told you're not allowed to be angry or feel angry. And I find that it's such an important emotion for us to feel and know how to express and know what it means, right? And so we do this meditation where we notice that inner storm that's rising, mm-hmm. and we sit with it and we breathe it and we get charged up for it so that we're ready to take action, mm-hmm. so that we can use our voice mm-hmm. to fight for what's important.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful, because part of the training that I do is anger management training, and that's exactly what I do. I go through it with my patients and say, okay, what does anger feel like to you? What kind of energy does it give you? And is there a difference between the anger versus frustration and how that builds up? And let's talk about that and work through that. And to teach people not to control anger, but to be able to incorporate it into who you are. Because anger tells us information about what's going on. Exactly. So I love that. I love that. So I know you've written quite a few books now. I've read your first one, Superhero Therapy. So tell us about some of your other books that you've released recently. Recently, there's one having to do with Violet, a character named Violet, and she wants to be part of the dark
agents. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
The Dark Agency. Yeah. So I actually want to get that one and read it. But so tell us about some of the books you've written, and because I know they're specifically for certain groups.
Yes.
And so can you sort of share that with our listeners? Because I'm sure they want to maybe purchase some of them to help their own children or their clients as well.
Thank you. My goal is to make therapy interactive and playful and fun. Mm-hmm. And so I try to kind of vary formats with different books that I'm releasing. So Violet and the Trial of Trauma, so Dark Agents, is a graphic novel about a young witch with PTSD. And it's based on Greek mythology. So she goes to the underworld to join Hades's underworld intelligence agency, right? To battle supernatural spirits. But in order to become a really good agent, you actually have to learn mental health skills. And she had been running from her trauma most of her life, but now it's essential for her to face it if she wants to become the special agent, basically, in Hades's underworld intelligence agency. And each of the characters is facing something. Mm-hmm. Is facing some kind of painful experience that they hadn't dealt with. And as a part of their training, they have to learn to face it. So that's the Dark Agents graphic novel. I have Therapy Quest, which is a choose your own adventure book. And mm-hmm. so the reader is the leading character because the book is written in second person, you. And the reader gets to make choices, and the choices that they make affect their journey. I wrote Superwomen, which allows the reader to be a part of a support group in the book. So in the book, there are 7 women who are undergoing treatment for some kind of either trauma or discrimination or chronic pain or some kind of difficulty. And the reader is the 8th person in the support group. And the book is written in an interactive format so that the group kind of talks to the reader and the reader gets to respond to the group. And I wanted the reader to feel included and involved in the process. My most recent book that came out digitally already, but is coming out in a month as a hard copy, is called It Shouldn't Be This Way. And it's all about, how do we build room for grief and anger and frustration and all these emotions that we're told we shouldn't feel in situations that shouldn't happen? And so how do we very compassionately build room for that, mm-hmm. so that we can learn about the kind of person that we want to be, so that we can embrace our inner hero?
Right. You know, I love that. I can't say that enough. I just think this is really great, and I'm really geeking out right now. By the way, and I noticed you have a game as well.
Not exactly a game. So are you talking about the playing cards?
The playing cards, yes.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you for that. So It's called the Upbeat Geek. Mm-hmm. So those are cards that I co-wrote with Dean Rankin, and he illustrated them. He's the illustrator for Futurama and Simpsons and Rick and Morty graphic novels.
Yeah, yeah.
And he also had worked as addiction substance counselor. So these are, it's not quite a game, but it's sort of like mental health support cards. So there's 52 cards. So one for each week, sort of, but of course you can use them more frequently. So the idea is that you pull a card from a deck and you learn a skill, for example, battle your inner dragons. And, you know, there's a cute picture of like a little kid fighting dragons with like a wooden sword or mm-hmm. something. And so you learn a skill and you practice that skill that week.
Okay, so I want to turn the tables a little bit and talk, because you are an immigrant, and what that experience is like for immigrants coming to the United States, because of the war happening in Ukraine and other places where people are coming here because they all know or have the belief that the United States is the best place for them to be, is opportunity. And so let's talk a little bit about what that transition is like and what we can teach to other people about how to be kinder to people who are immigrants.
Yeah, yeah. Great question. I think, of course, there were kids that picked on me, and I was bullied in middle school, and there were some really horrifying experiences that happened to me. But also, I experienced a lot of kindness, and it's that kindness that I really want to talk about. So, for example, not knowing how to use the bus, right? Like, how do you pay for the bus fare? And just having somebody very kind and very patient show me how to do that. Not understanding how to shop in the supermarket. And so, you know, it's things like that that I think are so small to somebody maybe who's taking a helpful action, but means so much to the person who is still dealing with the trauma of being in another country, not knowing the language, not knowing if they're going to survive, not knowing if they're going to be harmed in some kind of way. And so I think if you see somebody who doesn't seem to speak the language, see if you can help them somehow. Use very simple words. Talk slowly. Don't talk very loudly, mm-hmm. because, you know, majority of people who are coming from another country can hear perfectly well. But it helps if you slow down your speech, offer to help, offer to show somebody how to do something. But honestly, kindness goes such a long way, because especially for the refugees coming from Ukraine right now, they're fleeing a war. For many of them, their homes are destroyed. They're terrified. And just knowing that somebody cares enough can be a difference between life and death, because we know that when people are going through trauma, when they're going through loneliness, they're at biggest risk for suicide. But it only takes one kind action to change a person's mind sometimes. I think it's just really being on a lookout for somebody that we can help, being patient, being kind, and being respectful.
Yes. Respectful, I think, is really the key, along with being kind. Because you never know what the person has gone through. You have no idea. And I have learned that sometimes just a smile can help. If you just smile, is often enough to help people calm down a little bit or be willing to hear the assistance you're willing to provide them. Because even if you're wanting to help, but if you approach it in a gruff manner, it could re-traumatize. It can still make someone fearful and make someone uncomfortable. And I think the thing that concerns me, much like what happened to you, you come from a place, you've been traumatized, and then you come to a new place and you are re-traumatized because of bullying, because of judgment, because of someone calling you radioactive, or, you know, having those judgments about you. And so as clinicians, we sort of know what to do, but the everyday person really doesn't. So I like that you talked about just that kindness, being slow in your speech, being very non-judgmental in your speech and tone of voice, and welcoming. And that, just that a little bit, goes a very, very long way for people. And as therapists, as psychologists, our goal is to do no harm and help people as much as possible. And so I think it's really good that we not only work with people who are immigrants or refugees or just moving to San Diego from another town, helping people out, is also to teach others how to do the same. Because it's so important to teach others how to be kind to other people equally.
Right in the heart. Absolutely. That was so beautiful. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, you're welcome. What do you think about people who are prejudiced, who are xenophobic, who are anti-Semitic? What are your opinions about someone who's struggling with those belief systems?
I think a lot of it comes out of fear. And I think a lot of it comes out of somebody's pain and not knowing how to dislodge that pain, right? Because blame, Brené Brown talks about this, that blame is a dislodge of pain that somebody doesn't know how else to process. Mm-hmm. And I think that unfortunately for so many people who are xenophobic, racist, prejudiced, homophobic, you know, xenophobic, I think people are struggling and they haven't learned skillful ways of addressing that pain. And so I think they're looking for ways to explain what's happening and they're scared. And so when they can find a target group to explain their pain, then I think it almost gives them a semblance of control, but it doesn't work that way. And pain doesn't go away. And I think that's sometimes what happens when people join gangs. You know, they're looking for belonging. They're looking for almost like a family. But that pain of, you know, that loneliness and lack of belonging doesn't necessarily get met over time. And in fact, many people continue to suffer until they find a true group that they really belong with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Another thing that I've thought about this for a long time, another thing that I'm thinking that goes along with that pain is the fear of scarcity, the fear that it's not enough. It's not going to be enough for me. So these people, whoever these people are bad because they're taking away from me. So not only am I afraid, but I'm also afraid for myself because there's less for me if these folks come here. And fortunately, we live in a country where there's more than enough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think people don't always feel that, don't always see that. I can't tell you how many times I've had people tell me to go back to my country, or people telling me that I'm somehow stealing from the government. So every year on September 15th, which is the anniversary of me and my family coming to the United States, I post a post of gratitude on social media to this country, to giving myself and my family the opportunity to be here. It, you know, allowed me to be able to get higher education and become a psychologist and to be able to help people. And for the most part, you know, like 99.999% of responses are so kind and so uplifting. And then there's inevitably one, you know, that's like just full of hate and rather painful. And You know, I think it's something unfortunately almost come to expect now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it really demonstrates the fear. And you're right. I think that idea of scarcity that you mentioned, and I think Brené Brown also talks about, right, this fear that people have, and it creates blinders. Mm-hmm. And then it's really hard to build empathy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So any thoughts of how we can get in there and help those people that are in this place of fear, this place of scarcity, this place of, because oftentimes it's the place where they feel they're not enough.
Yes, yes. I think a big part of it, first of all, can't be done over social media. At least I don't think can be done fully. There are certainly beautiful demonstrations of some individuals responding and going on, you know, like a response exchange that's very kind. But I think it tends to work better, at the very least, over video. I think the more sensory properties we can utilize, if we can see, if we're able to use sight, if we can see the expression on the other person's face, if we have the ability to hear, if we can hear their voice, then empathy can build from. And over time, if, you know, somebody who is, for example, anti-Semitic, if they were to talk to me, I imagine that they might become less anti-Semitic because they might be anti-Semitic because maybe they never spend a lot of time talking to Jewish people. And maybe they're xenophobic because they never spend a lot of time talking to immigrants, right? And you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that allowing people the space to talk about their experiences, you know, their hurts, and also get to know somebody who's from the group that they are scared of or feel threatened by can allow empathy to build. But I think the kind of divide that we're seeing now where people are becoming more and more polarized and, you know, and it's this group, the in-group, and this is the out-group that unfortunately creates more conflict.
Right now, I'm often at a loss as to what to do, but I really love what you're saying. And you're right that if we just spend time with someone that we feel threatened by of that group and separately address our own pain, then we can see things from other people's perspectives, because a lot of this has to do with perspective and how you see the world and your place in the world. So, yeah, to mean circle back around to superheroes. I think that's what makes using the superhero therapy so helpful, because everyone can connect to some superhero, no matter who they are.
Exactly. And I think that it's finding those similarities that can bridge those gaps, mm-hmm. right? Susan Fiske's study finds that when people are in an MRI and they see images of people that they see as an outgroup, they're not even seeing them as human, right? Like the activation in the brain is more representative of seeing those people as inhuman. Mm-hmm. But if those individuals are asked, what kind of foods do you think those other individuals might like to eat? Then now there's an empathy activation. Right, like in, for example, the insular centers of the brain. And I'm thinking that the same thing might be true for who do you think is their favorite Avenger? And do you think they also like Star Wars, right? And I think that that's the beauty of Comic-Con, for example. When we go to certain places where we see other people who like the same fandoms, same characters, right, then there isn't very much of this kind of divide. Everyone's on the same team. And I've been to very large conventions like the San Diego Comic-Con, and I've also traveled to the Midwest to teeny tiny conventions, you know, just a few hundred people. And it's at those conventions that I see the biggest differences, because people tell me, you know, it's the one time a year that I feel like I can really be myself. Like when I put on my Batman mask, uh-huh. I feel like I'm putting on the real me. Huh. And I can geek out and I can be open and I can be myself and I don't have to feel judged.
Wow.
And I thought that was really profound.
That is very profound. Because earlier you were talking about how girls are made to feel you can't be this, you can't do that. But boys are given those same messages.
100%.
You know, you have to be this way. You have to be that way. You know, a boy's supposed to do this and a boy's not supposed to cry and a boy. So we all have been given those messages.
A person of every sex and every gender identity, right, is told you're not allowed to feel this, you're not allowed to do that. And then, of course, non-binary and trans folks are discriminated in every which way.
Every which way, exactly. So if we can all work together to move beyond that and just allow a person to be whatever their being says they should be, I think people would be a lot more happier.
I agree.
And a lot more happier and less angry at the other person.
And I also wonder if when getting to know somebody, if rather than looking at those dividing questions, mm-hmm. we started with like, you know, what kind of TV shows do you like? Or what are your favorite movies? How do you like to geek out, right? What are your favorite foods? If we can form that connection at the start, then I think it's easier to have a more present and open conversation about things that we might feel differently about.
Mm-hmm. True. That's so true. There was this activity I used to do with teenagers, and then I started doing it with adults, and they seemed to like it equally. So I would just throw out two opposing items, like a flower and a tree, and say, would you rather be a flower or a tree? And so I'd have all the trees to stand on one side of the room, all the flowers to stand on the opposite side of the room. And then they would have to talk about why they chose a flower or a tree. And you would be surprised, thinking it's talking about stereotypes, you would be surprised at the people who picked flowers, who, and they're just these big, gruff, tough kind of guys. And they're like, oh, I would love to be a flower because then I could be pretty and offer beauty all the time. And I'm like, oh. And so we would play this game, and they loved the game. They absolutely loved it. And then it created, in this group of people that I would work with, it would create that connection. And you would find people who were gay, who were recently out of prison, and now they're their best of friends. And it's, you know, it's really, really interesting how that works. And it's because they allowed themselves to look at the similarities and not look at the differences between themselves. And that just really created lovely relationships relationships that I know are going to last for a very, very long time. And so, yes, I agree with you 100%. If we allow ourselves to look at similarities with people rather than differences, and allow ourselves just to be who we are without judgment of ourselves, I think we might be a little bit happier.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I think that there's always something we can find in common with someone else, whether it's whether it's a superhero, whether it's a TV show, whether it's a particular book or a movie or a song, right, that, you know, we can both, you know, dance around to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think that's when magic happens, because I think, you know, there's almost 8 billion people in the world, and 99, well, you know, maybe not quite that far, according to American statistics, it seems like over 20%, but I think it's higher, over 20% of people admit to being lonely. I think that those numbers are much
higher.
I think it's higher. Those are just reported rates of loneliness. But I think that if we were all able to say, I feel lonely, I feel unseen, right? I feel unheard. I wonder how many masks would then come down, and, you know, and how open people might become. And I think that's the power of superheroes, is that they allow for that kind of safety to be built into that conversation. And then I think it's easier for people to take the mask off.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, the other thing that I noticed, superheroes, not they're, you know, strong and powerful, but they're also very vulnerable, because they're putting themselves out to risk when they don't know what the results are going to be. They have no idea. And, you know, we've been quoting Brené Brown, but vulnerability, she describes as a strength and not a weakness. And no matter what superhero you like or what character you like, they allow themselves to be vulnerable because they put themselves out to help other people, not really knowing the end result. And that is vulnerability.
100%. When I was working with active duty Marines, they would tell me, you know, the Marine Corps prepared me for the for combat, right? I wasn't scared being out there in the war zone, but coming back to the civilian world and going to see a therapist, they would tell me that it's scarier than combat, right? It's the many would say that it was the scariest thing they've ever done. And so I'd remind them the definition of courage. The definition of courage is being afraid but doing it anyway. And so we talk about vulnerability being the most courageous thing of which humans are capable, specifically because it's the scariest. And that makes it the most courageous. So yes, every single superhero out there is courageous because they show up even when they're scared.
So for the past 2 years, we have been dealing with this pandemic. And everyone has dealt with it their own way. And there's some people who are still struggling with the isolation. And we talked about loneliness. How would you use superhero therapy to help people through the pandemic now that we're coming out of the pandemic? How would you use that to help your working with patients or clients?
Wonderful question. Thank you so much for asking that. So in doing telehealth for most of the pandemic, and I'm actually staying on telehealth, the therapy looks fairly similar in that we still talk about the client's favorite fandoms, for example, their favorite heroes, their favorite role models. We might watch a clip together. So thanks to screen sharing and things like that, we can watch a clip together. I often assign a particular movie to a client. So I might ask them to rewatch their favorite movie, for example, for inspiration from their favorite hero, to think about what their hero might say to them. And then we work on engagement in community, which can be virtual. For example, if you were to become a superhero for a day or a week or the rest of your life, what might that look like and how might you serve your community? And so it might be things like posting a video about mental health. I've had folks do blog posts, for example, or TikTok videos about their experiences with mental health or their love for superheroes and what it taught them about their experiences with anxiety or trauma. And it's been really interesting because for many of my clients, they might have expected a couple of, you know, positive comments, for example. And in many cases, they were overwhelmed by the amount of gratitude that they received just by sharing their own story in this way.
How did you help them overcome the isolation?
A big part of isolation, the opposite of isolation is not always in-person meetings, it's connection, right? So we're really talking about loneliness and belonging. And so we talked about what might be some way to facilitate belonging, whether it's, let's say, virtual dinner dates with families that are thousands of miles away, or whether it's through somehow supporting their community virtually, or perhaps maybe dropping off groceries of on a step of an elderly neighbor and things like that. And so for many folks, it was about taking action to somehow help their community, even if they couldn't, especially during the first year of the pandemic, couldn't be in person with other folks. So it was somehow taking that step to give back to the community that allowed them to find that sense of belonging.
Wow. I could see that. The first year I had COVID, and so I know people helped me. And then I was able to reciprocate with when someone else was going through it. So I can see that. So it's just that being able to connect to your neighbor, connect to your coworkers, connect to just making that connection and to avoid that sense of loneliness.
And exactly. Yeah. I think it's about having a role to play, right? Knowing that I need to get out of bed because I have to feed my cat or because my neighbor is relying on me. It's huge. And I'm providing some consultation and also virtual trainings now to providers in Ukraine. And one of the things we're finding is that when people have a purpose, they're more resilient. And so not only providers, but non-providers alike are wanting to help. And so I've trained a number of people now in providing psychological first aid. And one of the things we're seeing is that what helps people is knowing I'm helping and this is what I can do, you know, so this is how I can help my community, even when we're all in this terrible situation.
Yes, yes. That is so true. Having a purpose in life, having something meaningful to do definitely can take you out of that sense of loneliness and that sense of being by yourself. And so I do get that. Very good. Yeah. Yeah. So we have a few minutes left. Are there any statements or things you feel like our audience might need to know or you want them to know about you or about being an immigrant? Anything? Any thoughts?
I think if it's okay, I want to go a little bit more general. And I think that majority of people out there have had at least some time in their life where they didn't feel like they're enough, where they didn't feel like they belong, where they didn't feel like maybe they're good enough to be loved or accepted. And there's a reason for that. We're wired for belonging, right? Where we, there's a reason why we like superhero movies, because I think we see a sense of belonging through these fictional characters. And so to anyone listening to this, I want to remind you that you impact the world more than you realize in the moment and more than you might ever realize later. Like if you could ever watch a movie of your life and see the impact you're making, you would see hundreds of people whose life you've made better by something kind, something seemingly small that you did, and you've probably saved a life just by being kind to somebody else, and that person might never think to tell you this. And so I just wanted to remind you that just like those superheroes that you look up to, you are already a hero. You are already making an impact. And so if ever you're having a day where you might not feel like you matter, I just wanted to remind you that you make more of an impact than you realize.
Yes, that is so true. And I love that. So, so very true. Well, Dr. Scarlett, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with you. And how do people find you if they want to read your book or receive therapy with you? How do people locate you?
Thank you. Thank you. I'm all over social media. If you look for Janina Scarlett, my website is superhero-therapy.com. And that's probably the easiest way to find me. There's a mailing list you can sign up for, but I'm pretty responsive on social media.
All right. Great. Great. So thank you for spending this time with me again and with us and with Diving Into Healing. And it's time to dive back into our everyday lives.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
The information and advice offered is not intended to treat or diagnose and is not meant to replace any other professional consultation. If you'd like to know more about the San Diego Psychological Association, go to our website at sdpsych.org. That's sdpsych.org. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, take care of yourself and be well.